everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Madeleine Walker, and I would guess to describe what she does in simple terms is that she communicates with animals and also heals them and has the ability to solve problems that exist between animals and their owners. Welcome to the program, Madeleine.
Hi, thank you for having me with you.
Well, you're very welcome. Now, I've explained very simply what it is you do, but perhaps you would like to tell our listeners in your own words exactly what it is you get involved in, and perhaps a little bit about your background as to how you came into this type of work.
Right, well, a long story, and really a vertical learning curve for me. It wasn't something that I was looking for. It just happened one day. I used to be married to a very scientific vet and loved working in the conventional veterinary medicine field, but just always loved animals, and I always loved the connection to my own animals. It's such a special connection, and I really felt always that animals were very in touch with our emotions. And I can remember as a small child coming home from school having had quite a difficult day at school, and my dog would just always know if I was upset, and it would just come and sit with me and, I don't know, just give me a lick, and it would just make everything seem okay. And so with the work I'm doing now, it's very much working with the animals. People call me out to see their animals because it's displaying perhaps a behavioural problem or a physical problem, and I work alongside some very lovely holistic vets, so it's nice to work alongside veterinary surgeons who are open to this somewhat strange way of working, some people might think. But generally the animals are showing some sort of symptoms, either emotional or physical, that may be going on with them, but also can be going on with their owners. And so when I'm lucky enough to be able to talk to them telepathically, they very often flag up issues that, that their owners need to address. So my former work working with humans, with people and their emotional issues, working as a stress management consultant, comes in very handy when we have a session with the animal and then very often have a follow-on session with the owner. And thanks to the animals' advice and wisdom, if you like, and insight, we can clear a lot of issues that are challenging the owners as well as the animals. And when I'm working with competition horses, obviously the horse and rider have to be as happy and as well balanced emotionally and physically as possible to have a harmonious team so they can then go on and reach their potentials. So it works on all sorts of levels.
Right. Were you very young when you first realised that you could communicate with animals?
It's fairly recent that I've been, I suppose, in telepathic communication with them. I think I've always had a huge affinity with animals and always had hives full of animals and ponies and dogs and cats and rabbits and fish and mice, you name it, we used to have it, guinea pigs. But having actually been able to talk to them, I suppose, started about 8 or 9 years ago where I was just cuddling this puppy and it just suddenly started talking to me, and I was pretty shocked, as you could imagine, because not only did it talk to me, but it was talked about actually reincarnating. It had come back to help my friend. And that was a double whammy, really. So I really thought, I don't know, I thought I'd really lost, you know, lost the plot a bit then. I thought I was maybe going a bit crazy. But it's, you know, it's just that it evolved from there, and I feel very fortunate in the direction that my life's taken.
Yeah. So what, before that actually happened, were you then doing healing work with humans? Were you already into healing?
Yes, I was. I think I'd been on a spiritual journey, raising my awareness and my intuitive powers, if you like, of skills, and just becoming more and more aware of myself, and just that there was a much bigger picture than I formally realised.
Yeah.
And so I was, yeah, I mean, I was working with a, doing my most conventional hats were a stress management consultant, an art and music therapist, and still always, you know, having animals and having a home filled with animals for my children to look after as well. And so I sort of was working with animals only really just as companions. I wasn't really working with them as such. And, I was doing a bit of healing with them, but I suppose mainly it was for the humans that I was working with.
Do you always go to see the animals, or do you have a sort of surgery somewhere where they're brought into you?
I usually go to especially the horses. I usually go to the yards because it's not all. I don't have facilities anymore for horses to come to me. People can bring their dogs to see me, which is really nice. But generally, it's quite nice to see animals in their own home because they tend to be quite sort of stressed. Sometimes better to see them in their own environment. But if people are too far away from me, I also do distance work. People can send me a photograph or a hair sample.
Oh, yeah.
And I can get quite a lot of information that way. So my clients overseas, I'll work with them in that way. We can still get quite a lot of information. Hopefully I can still help, even though I'm not physically in the same country with them, which is wonderful if we can get some good results that way as
very
well.
Good. Now, it obviously will be a surprise to some people that you talk in terms of animals telling you about their previous lives. Now, I totally believe in reincarnation, and I must admit that was a surprise to me. Now, you have a very nice story, which I guess is in your book, about a chestnut gelding called Roo. Would you like to tell our listeners about that? Because I think that particularly illustrates what we're talking about.
Well, there were two major things going on with Roo. Roo was one of the first horses that I'd seen that had been in a past life battle where he had a really horrendous time. But the second time I went back to see him, I walked into the yard and things had calmed quite a bit between him and his owners. He had had quite a difficult life in many, many homes, and I think he was testing his present owner big time to see whether she really meant what she said when she said that she would have him for life. And after I saw him the first time, things had been quite calm, and then he kicked her really badly, so she rang me and said, "I don't know what's going on with Roo, can you please come and see him again?" So I got into the yard, and Roo was hanging his lovely head out of his stable door, and all I could hear in my head, he was just screaming at me, "Rupert, Rupert, Rupert," that's all he was saying. I thought, what on earth is going on here? So I asked his owner, I said, all Rupert's saying to me is the name Rupert. Does that mean anything to you? And whereupon she just burst into tears and told me that Rupert was a horse that she'd had before, who had literally died in her arms, and she always felt such huge trauma still and guilt because she hoped that she could have or should have saved him. And It was incredibly emotional, and then Rupert told me that actually he had come back to her. And I always thought that his name was spelt R-O-O, but when we looked at his passport, it was actually spelt R-U, and obviously the present owner had no say in his name. He'd been sort of named by his previous owners.
Yeah.
And so I just thought that was just extraordinary that he'd come back not only to find eventually through many, many homes and all sorts of traumas, he finally found his way back to his owner that he'd actually lived with before in his past incarnation. And not only that, but had come back with his name, just a shortened version of his old name, which I thought was absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
But I'm pleased to say that he's now being very well behaved and they've got a wonderful relationship.
Brilliant. But I think you, although it's to some extent slightly unpleasant story, you perhaps might tell our listeners what was the problem with Rupert and how you noticed the condition of his energy field that I guess told you what the trouble was.
In the initial time I went to see him, when I first went in his stable, he just kept saying to me, it's my legs, and I thought, okay, so what's all this about? And so, very dramatically, and it was quite shocking for me to see, he sort of ran a video clip image in my head of a battle that he'd been in, which was something like, I felt, with samurai warriors, and he was being ridden into battle against something like a samurai warrior, and I just saw this horrible scene where this warrior actually got his huge sword and just sliced through Rue's front legs, make him fall, and by doing that, obviously, then he could dispatch his rider, and poor Rue obviously lost his front legs, and it was just obviously horrendous. And as I looked at his front legs, it was like there were just dotted lines. It just didn't seem like they were there fully energetically. And so I was I sort of asked how I could help this, and so I had to visualise almost redrawing energetically, filling in the gaps. It was like a dot-to-dot sort of line drawing back up again and sort of recreating his front legs. It sounds very strange, and I felt it was very strange. It was a very odd thing to be doing, but I was just trying to do what I was being guided to do to help heal that horrible memory that he was still sort of holding onto as he cut in with that. So that was pretty horrible to see that, but obviously, you know, I had to do what I was felt guided to do to help.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I understand that even with humans, when they reincarnate, they sometimes carry marks that are the scars of injuries that they have received in a previous life. So what you're talking about there, what you saw, maybe is not so surprising when you think of that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, my experiences since then, as I've worked with many animals and people that are still carrying sort of a cellular memory, some energy of some weapon is still stuck in them. They might have a really bad backache, and there might be the memory of, you know, a past traumatic event where perhaps they were killed with a spear or a sword or an arrow or something.
Yeah.
And so that's something else that I do, is to remove that transmit the energy of that and create healing through that, and very often the pain instantly disappears. So I'm not always sure quite how it works, but if it helps and stops pain, that's all that matters, really.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Do you find very often that it is the owners that are actually at fault, and how do you cope with them? Because their ego doesn't really allow for the fact that they may be the cause of their animal's problems.
Well, obviously, I have to be very careful what I say and how I say it. And generally, some people can be very sceptical, and that's fair enough. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and I must say that probably before I understood what was going on and learnt all this, having been taught by the animals, I think I probably would have been a bit, maybe not sceptical, but, I think I probably would have not been totally sort of sure of how these sort of things could happen or that they could work. But I think the animals very often give such strong evidence that I think even the biggest skeptic sometimes has to believe it, because the things that they can tell me are just so amazing and so in depth that no one else could possibly know. And I think they're usually quite shocked then, so that they maybe are more open to taking on board perhaps some of the suggestions that the animals are making. And my job is to try and as gently as possible find a way to suggest ways of helping and moving forwards. So that's my job, to find the right way of saying it. And sometimes I have a sort of an argument in my head with the animals, and they usually insist that I tell them, and I'm thinking, how am I going to say this? So a lot of tact and diplomacy has to come into play sometimes.
Yes, yes. This is a wonderful thought, this sort of conversation you have with animals. Now, I gather that you actually work out individual healing programs, as you said, based on the emotional challenges that affect all of us. So one might first off think of healing as being something like laying on of hands or sending energies where it's needed. But would I be right in thinking your healing programs might be a little bit different? I mean, tell us what sort of thing you put in place.
Well, I work with the chakra systems of the animals, the physical chakra systems, but also the higher soul chakra systems. And so I would, if I'm working physically with a horse, I put my hand on its dock just at the top of its tail and visualize sending energy up through the spine of the horse. And that can tell me quite a lot about where the chakras, where maybe the energy is a little bit blocked or some other really good flow of energy. And anybody who's listening who knows about the chakra systems in humans will know that the chakras obviously relate to physical and physiological systems, but also emotional issues. So it's a pretty good indication of what's going on with the horse emotionally if you can intuit where there are energy blocks within the chakras. Sometimes I use a pendulum to perhaps find an area that seems to be there's maybe a blockage, and perhaps use the pendulum to draw out some of that energy. I use something called light crystals, which are etheric crystals, and I can place those, you know, sometimes perhaps in the spine or somewhere in the body of the animal, and in people, also in people's environments. If there's maybe some negative energy in a house, I can go and remove that and place a light crystal there. So the light crystals are just intuit them, and I place them wherever I feel I'm guided to put them for the best, the highest good, the best sort of way of healing.
Yes.
Whatever is appropriate.
In actual fact, your healing process or system is not unlike that which would apply to human beings as well. I'm familiar with the chakra system, so I understand what you mean there. Do you find with animals they heal more quickly than human beings?
Is the healing process quicker, or do they recover quicker, do you mean?
The process, yeah.
I think everybody, you know, every animal, as every human being, as their individual, it just depends on... I think animals are generally more receptive, not necessarily... You know, all, but I think it's hard to say because in every case I have to treat individually, really, and everything's tailor-made to what feels appropriate for each individual case, really. So it's very hard to generalise.
Right. We don't want to give away too many secrets that are in your book, but having read some of your case studies, it might be nice to hear about Saint Rocky, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier. Tell us about that.
Oh, Rocky, yeah, he is just the most amazing dog. He just oozes, and every paw oozes love. He's just the most gorgeous dog. And he'd had a very, very rough life until he came to his present owner, and she contacted me because he was terrified of bangs, and especially this time of year with the fireworks going on around, you know, finding it very, very difficult. And she was obviously very distressed at seeing his distress. And so she asked me to have a chat with him to find out where his fear came from and exactly what had happened to him, because she had rescued him from the centre. And he apparently he's a Staffordshire Bull Terrier, and he'd been in a very rough area. And tried to be used in dog fights. But being such a great big softy, of course, he wouldn't fight. And so he always came off worse. And obviously, I don't know whether they were gambling with it or not, but obviously he wasn't a very good dog to have around, because obviously he wasn't going to win any fights. And he just showed me some really horrible situations where he'd been beaten with, rubber tubing.
Oh, dear.
And they would sort of bang on his cage and rattle his cage to try and aggravate him, to force him into being aggressive. But he was just this wonderful, gentle dog, and so he was just thrown out on the streets. And fortunately, he was picked up and brought to the rescue centre.
Mm.
But, of course, all those sort of loud sounds, any bangs or raised voices, would just send him into shock again. So once we actually understood all that, in conjunction with the veterinary surgeon, we talked about remedies, homeopathic remedies and bark flower remedies, And just general, I think sometimes animals are just so happy to be heard. Very often they can, their symptoms can ease by just having expressed their feelings and their fears, because it's just nice for them to get off their chest, really, rather like a human. So he's much, much better. And now he gets taken into places like hospices as a petting dog, because there's a photograph of him on my website, and he just laughs the whole time. He has this great big smile on his face. And you just can't help but fall in love with him. And so he's called Rocky, but I just christened him Saint Rocky, because he is just a little earth angel, I think.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm still amazed at the extent to which you can communicate with them, and the apparent intelligence of the animals in being able to communicate back in a way that you perfectly understand. Now, I must declare my interest here. My wife and I have always been cat lovers, so we've undoubtedly got quite a few listeners who also are interested in cats. So tell us about the case history of Cindy.
Yes, that was very interesting. That was actually a reading I had to do for an editor of a magazine that I was hoping to be able to write a column for, and so I suppose to test my worth, they said, okay, we'll do a reading on this cat. So I had a very small sample of literally a few hairs from this cat and a photograph. That's all I had. I didn't know anything else at all. And the information that the cat gave me became very personal, and some very personal details about her owner, and I was thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know whether I can really say all this. It was very, very personal about her relationships and about wanting to have children and all sorts of things, and that sort of department. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, and it threw me reams of information I was writing down. So I emailed the editor, because actually it was the owner of the magazine, it was her cat. And I said, look, I'm getting a lot of information, and I don't know quite how to say it. I don't really feel I should be saying it to you. I'd really like to speak to the owner of the cat, because I think otherwise it's not fair. It would be inappropriate of me. And so she gave me the owner's email, and so I emailed and said, look, I have got some information from your cat. It is rather personal. Would it be okay to tell you? And she said, well, yeah, tell me anything. You know, I want to know. So I told her, and it went back to a past life that this lady had with her cat as a priestess in a temple, and the cat was a temple cat. And at that stage, it was thought that making love to the priestess gave the men huge powers, and it was a very sacred thing to do, and the priestesses were very special and very, very highly thought of. And as they grew in power, I think there became some sort of rivalry between the priests, and so they found a way of throwing them all out and casting them out and saying that they were whores and all this sort of thing. The whole act of making love became something that was sort of desecrated and seen as being, dirty or whatever. And some of that's the memory had stayed with her, and so she was having a lot of problems in her relationship, and so I was trying to, again, tactfully find the right way of saying this, because his cat was telling me all this stuff, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. Anyway, all the physical details that the cat gave me were absolutely correct, apparently, and the lady admitted that there had been problems, and her lovely husband, obviously, they were trying very hard to work through their problems, and they both desperately wanted a child, but obviously things weren't working out very well. But thanks to the cat revealing all this and bringing awareness and understanding, she could then let go of some of the fears and some of the entrenched cellular memories that had come through from all those, I imagine, maybe a couple of thousand years ago. And the next email I got from her was not, I had a photograph of the cat the first time, the second time I had a photograph of a scan, because she was dad pregnant, and I heard later that they'd had a little girl, and that everybody in the family was very happy, including Cindy. She was very pleased with herself, and so that was just the most amazing outcome, that the cat sort of flagged all this up so that it could be understood and released, and they're now very happy and they've got this wonderful child. So that was just fantastic.
Absolutely wonderful. I mean, just out of interest, was that experience she had in a previous life in Egypt?
I felt it was more, I can't think of the name of it, Minoan. It was not, it didn't feel quite Egyptian. It felt like a Minoan past life.
Oh, I see, yeah. Right, I was only curious there because the type of thing you were talking about with the priestess and the priest seemed to me that it might be Egypt. Now,
Sorry, I was going to say, yeah, a very similar thing happened in Egypt, and I've had several past lives in Egypt, and we connected with animals with that as well. So, I think that was a fairly common thing to happen.
It's interesting, actually, to realise from what you said there that we sometimes meet up with animals that we have been connected to in the past. That's a revelation to me, I must admit. I never thought of that possibility.
Well, I feel that, you know, as humans we travel in soul groups, but I've realised that actually the animals travel with us as well. And this is a very deep connection. I think mainly with the animals, it's a love connection. I mean, with humans, sometimes you can have a bit of a difficult time, and sometimes you can meet up again to hopefully resolve that, but still can be very challenging. But with animals, I feel that they come back to us because they want to carry on with a loving connection. They want to carry on helping us and carrying on with that love, and that's really why I've been driven to write the book, because I just feel that people need to be made aware that animals are so much more than just a dog or a cat. They are huge sentient beings, and we love our animals, but we have no idea just how much they love us in return. So therefore the title of the book is An Exchange of Love, because I think that's the way that it works.
Right, you've mentioned your book now. When I was in contact with you a while back, as it happens, your book was due out today. Did it come out today?
That's right, yes.
It did?
I have had some. So that was perfect.
Yes, very exciting.
I've been absolutely driven by the animals to get their message out there. I'm just so thrilled to be able to speak to people like yourself.
Right.
Just to try and raise awareness for the animals' sake, it's like I want to get their voice heard. So I'm really excited about it, and I just hope you'll enjoy it.
Is it actually already available? I've been
selling to my students, because I run courses to teach people how to communicate with animals. And some of my clients, but it's now available, everywhere, I think. It's available in America with MBN Books, and in Australia it's available with Bromley Books. It's also on Amazon, so if anybody wants to have a look at it on Amazon, and hope they feel drawn to ordering it, so it should be available now.
Yeah, so is it available directly from you as well?
From myself, yes.
Yes, oh, it is, so they can go on to your
website. If anybody would like a signed copy, then I'd be more than happy to sign a copy for them.
Right, I believe you have a special website in connection with the book, is that correct?
It's because it's the whole ethos of my work, so the website is www.anexchangeoflove.com. Unfortunately, I don't have PayPal facilities, but I'm sure we can work something out. Because it would be lovely to personalise a copy for anybody who's interested in it.
I must say, if I've read the price of your book correctly, in sterling, it's £9.99, and if that's correct, that sounds to be a very reasonable price.
Well, I think it's $19.95, I think, if anyone is interested in America. Well, as I said, I just want to get their message out there, and even if people think that some of the things we've been talking about are rather strange, if it begins to make people think that there might just be a possibility that this could work, this could be something to think
about. Mm. Certainly deserves to be. Are you still there? Ah, oh, you've gone, haven't you? Or oh, I've gone. Quincy, back again. Are you there?
I'm here, sorry, I don't know what happened there.
No, I don't know. It went dead at my end, but okay, that was a very minor break there, so no big problems. We were discussing your book, of course, and when I do the archive write-up for BBS, I will, of course, put your website details on there, so anybody who's miswriting that down will have a chance to follow that up. What I was going to come on to was the fact that you apparently carry all your swimming gear with you wherever you go, because it seems to me that you're forever swimming around with dolphins and goodness knows what other animals of the waters. Tell us a bit about your experiences there.
Oh, I've just been incredibly lucky to have the most wonderful experiences. I've swum with dolphins in the Azores and in the Bahamas with wild dolphins, and it's just been amazing, absolutely fantastic experiences. And then I was lucky enough to go and swim with humpback whales off the Dominican Republic. And being with humpback whales and their calves, there's a place called the Silverbanks, and that's where the mother whales go and have their calves. And we lived on the ocean for a week out with them, swimming with them every day and listening to them blowing through their blowholes around the boat at night. It was just the most amazing experience. And I met one particular female who allowed us to share time with her and her baby for about 4 hours in the water.
Wow.
And that was just the most sublime experience and something I will never ever forget, because the baby would come up to us and eyeball us and then swim off and then have a drink of milk and then go and get a breath of air and then come back and have a look at us, and just, and the water was so clear, and it was just the most experience. When I was actually in the water, I didn't actually manage to communicate too much. I think I was just so blown away by the whole experience and in such awe of them. But in the night times, lying in my bunk on the boat, I got some amazing information about just about how the whales are helping us and how aware they are of our human journey at a soul level. It's, you know, it is a really deep understanding that the whales have. I was lucky enough also last year and this year to go out to Mexico and swim with whale sharks and a giant manta ray this summer in June. Was the most amazing, again, lovely experience. And the whale sharks are enormous, but so gentle and very accepting. And the team we went out with were very, very respectful and very non-invasive. But the whale sharks were very happy to swim with us. And the place that we went, they were so numerous. And I know people have been out to Australia and spent a whole week and only ever found one whale shark. Where we went in Mexico, the very first morning, we were, you know, in with about three or four of them, and we had so many sightings and so many amazing encounters with them. It was fantastic. So my next adventure now is to go out and work with elephants in India. I'm going out in February.
I feel
very drawn to go and have a chat with an elephant, so that's going to be a real adventure.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds lovely. It's interesting, isn't it, that many aquariums, the open ones, have dolphins, and they seem to be quite happy for people to swim with them, for young children to get onto their backs. But they seem to give out a healing energy, and I've read a number of reports where youngsters have been really uplifted by simply being in the pool with the dolphins. Do you know much about their healing abilities at all?
Yeah, absolutely. They work on very deep levels. And I know when I went to the Dominican Republic to swim with the, and the cover of the book, and there's a picture of me giving healing to a dolphin, which is the cover of the book and on the website. I landed at Dominican Republic, and as I got off the plane, there were adverts for this oceanarium, and I really didn't want to go and see captive dolphins, because I feel that they should be in the wild. I was asked to go by the other dolphins. I was kept awake all my first night and told that I needed to go there to give healing to a special dolphin that was having problems. And so I said, okay, I would go. And I watched the dolphins doing their displays, and I was finding it quite distressing because I thought, oh, these poor dolphins, they should be in the wild, they shouldn't be captive. But anyway, I found the dolphin that needed healing, and we had an amazing experience. And I gave her some healing, and I hoped that that helped. And then that night, this might sound rather strange, but that night in bed, I was thinking about her. And when I actually felt her physically, she put her head on my shoulder, and it was just the most wonderful feeling to be holding a dolphin, and have the weight of a dolphin's head tucked into your shoulder was just a wonderful feeling. But I felt her come back again, and I was lying there thinking, okay, I'm lying in my bed, but I can feel this dolphin, really feel this dolphin. I can feel the pressure on my shoulder. And it was like energetically she'd come back to me to thank me for giving her healing. And the reason she'd become out of balance physically and emotionally was that she had a baby, and she was worried that her baby would never experience freedom, would never experience being in the wild. And so I had this little chat with her saying that captivity is just a state of mind. You know, you can, as you've proved now, you can travel anywhere in your mind. You can be anywhere you want to. And she gave me healing, and it was so powerful. It was an amazing experience. And she talked to me about the chakra systems of dolphins and of whales. And I also understood then that the reason the dolphins are there, that they've chosen that path to be captive, so they can actually give healing to so many more people, because so many people aren't able, they're not lucky, as lucky as I am, to be able to go out and swim with them in the wild, that's perhaps in the environment that that families can go, to keep the community, to do something different on a holiday, they might as well go and swim with a dolphin, or, go and watch a dolphin doing a display. But in that way, those particular dolphins are very special because they've chosen to be there so they can give healing to the children or to anybody who needs it. They seem to somehow be able to access emotions and physical symptoms. And when you think of all the children, perhaps autistic children, are taking this in the dolphins, and how healing that is for them and how much they improve. There have been lots of documentaries, haven't there, about how children's problem solving when they've been seeing the dolphin, children that maybe haven't been able to speak in their first years of their life, having from the dolphin, they suddenly start to speak and suddenly start to really blossom, and it's just wonderful.
A great story.
But I really understood why the dolphins were in captivity. That's what they were doing, so they could reach so many more people.
Getting back to your reference to the whales, I have read channeled messages that have said that they are extremely spiritually evolved, and they are very much affected by the things that go on around them. But I thought that was interesting that they talk of them in terms of spiritually being evolved. Maybe a lot of people don't equate animals or things like that with having a spiritual level to them.
No, and I think that's why it's important for people like you and I to get that message out there, to perhaps again just raise awareness and maybe make them think a little bit more about that, if that could be true. And I totally believe it's true, but if it could be true, to think about the whaling and even the whaling that's supposed to not be happening, and they say they're only catching so many for scientific reasons, and you think, this is true, if the whales are even half as amazing as we say they are, isn't that a travesty that they're still being slaughtered?
Yes. Now, there is a touchy point with certain breeds of dogs that, like the Rottweiler, that seem to have an instinct within them that makes them suddenly attack a human being, often a young child. Have you ever been brought in to try and determine what the problem is and why this particular breed of dog could be, say, unreliable in that respect?
Well, I don't believe they're only bad animals. I think there's really problems with the owners. I've been working with several large dogs that have had aggression problems, And sometimes animals attack people that that have a negative energy about them. There could be something, either they've been somewhere and a negative energy has attached itself. I had a case in the book about a horse called Neville who suddenly started to attack his owner's husband, and they'd always had a very happy relationship before that. Yeah. So I was called out to see that horse, and that was the reason that this the husband had been working somewhere and had a negative energy attached to him, and the horse wasn't actually trying to hurt or attack the man, he was trying to attack the negative energy. And dogs sometimes can pick up on that. I've had cases where cats have suddenly started to bite the children, and it has transpired that the child was being bullied at school and was bringing back the negative energy from the people that were bullied, or the children that were bullying them. And so you have to sort of try and look at the bigger picture and try and find out exactly what's going on, because there's always a good reason for it. They don't just do it for no good reason.
Now you're normally called out by pet owners, but some areas are specially set up to look after wild animals. Have you ever had any communication with literally wild animals? And is it any different to ones that are domesticated?
They're less sort of human orientated, obviously, but. They still have huge words of wisdom. I mean, obviously the wild cetaceans that I've been with, but I've sort of chatted to buffalo, and when I've been in Canada, I've sort of chatted to squirrels and bears and things like that. But I wasn't really too close with. But I'd been seeing the distance and just asked them if they wanted to chat, and obviously it's entirely up to them if they want to chat, and if they don't, that's fine too. It's it's again just about respect, really. And just sort of offered
a lot of connection
from my heart, and just if you want to talk to me, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
In that connection, I wondered whether you were ever called in, say, to a zoo somewhere where they might have been having peculiar problems with one of the inmates there. Has that ever happened to you?
That hasn't, but I would love to. I would love to be asked. I don't live very local to any zoos, but I would love to do that. And obviously, you know, in the UK, a lot of people are open to this, but there's still quite a lot of people that obviously would think that it's a little bit strange. I mean, people are becoming more and more open. But it would be lovely to go into zoos, and if I could help in any way, if animals are having any problems, it would be nice to know, you know, how I could help. I do get asked by some rescue centres to help, especially with the horses. There's a really lovely rescue centre where they call themselves a rehabilitation centre, and their motto is rehabilitation through communication. So they get the rescue horses in, and they call me in to have a chat with them so they can find out what their past history is, if they haven't been told. And then, of course, they can understand much better how to help them recover and know what their triggers might be, so they know that certain things might frighten them or upset them. So obviously then they're very careful not to cause any more stress to the animals. So that works really well, and I love doing that. Because then hopefully you can get the animals, the horses, feeling happier in themselves, and then place them in a loving new family, a loving new home.
Are you able to teach other people to communicate with animals similar to the way you do it?
Yes, I run workshops and courses. I've just come back from running a course in France, and I have several workshops in the UK, and then I'm hoping to go further afield. I would love to come to America or Australia. I've got clients to run workshops to teach people how to do this, because I believe we can all do this. Telepathic communication is nothing new. Indigenous tribes have been communicating telepathically for thousands of years. I think we've just become very westernized, and maybe we've been conditioned to thinking that telepathic communication is something that's a little bit weird. So I believe it's within all of us. It just depends how open we are and how much you want to really progress and offer yourself to be of service. I think that's the key word, and everything comes from a place of love.
Right, and indeed, I guess it is perhaps associated with the degree of love that you have for the animal that you want to communicate with, isn't it? It makes the link stronger, I would think.
Absolutely, and when you feel that an animal is thanking you, I mean, the title of the book actually came from a case study that I was describing to a friend of mine. I'd done some healing on this horse called Ebony, and it took my face in between its lips, and it was a very big horse, and I had one sort of flash of thought thinking, this horse could rip my face off if it wanted to. But I dismissed that instantly because I thought this horse, it was just thanking me, and I knew it was thanking me, and it was just giving me these waves of love in return for my love. I was giving it an exchanging breath. And I said to my friend that there was such an exchange of love. It was just overwhelming. And I had tears pouring down my face because I felt this horse thanking me. And she said to me, well, that's the title of your book, isn't it? And I went, yes, I think you're right.
exactly.
But to be thanked in that way and just being overwhelmed and almost overpowered by the love this horse was giving me, its gratitude was something I shall never forget. It was just incredible.
Yeah, you've certainly had some extremely nice experiences. Now, the program's been jogging along so well here, and it's been proved to be very interesting, that we're heading for the last couple of minutes or so. So I noticed that in addition to your books, you also have CDs. Now, what do they actually cover?
I haven't made any CDs yet. I'm hoping to do some CDs that I use in my workshops. I've had a lot of requests from students to make CDs of the meditations. So that's something I'm planning to do soon, hopefully.
Oh, that's fine. Okay. If there had been some in existence, I thought our listeners might like to know what you have. Perhaps you would take the last minute of your time to just confirm the title of your book and your website again. And are you approachable by email? And is your email address on the site?
Yes, it's madeline@anexchangeoflove.com. So that's obviously on the website, which is www.anexchangeoflove.com. It's, of course, the title of the book, An Exchange of Love. The subtitle of the book is Animals Healing People in Past, Present and Future Lifetimes.
Right.
So that's quite thought-provoking, I think.
Yeah.
yes, anyone can email me, and if they'd like some help, I'll be happy to do my best to see whether I can resolve some problems.
Well, I wish you every success with the book, and it's been lovely to have you on the programme.
Thank you very much.
For me, to speak to someone who does the type of work you do, and it's proved to be very interesting. So I'll thank you very much. And I'll just quickly announce my guest for next week, who will be Christy Robinette, who is, as she describes herself, an abnormally normal psychic medium. And I think that's all you need to know. I love the idea of that, of an abnormally normal psychic medium. Anyway, that lady will be with me next Friday, so I hope you can be with me. I'm sure you must have enjoyed today's programme. Thank you for coming along. God bless you all.